Life in a small town can be peaceful, nosy, or outright crazy. In the early 2000s, Marvin Heemeyer chose to turn the old boys club of his small town on its head, leading to his ultimate death. Today, we discuss the dark day Marvin Heemeyer snapped and took what he believed to be justice into his own hands on the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
Marvin John Heemeyer was an American welder and an automobile muffler repair shop owner who demolished numerous buildings with a modified bulldozer in Granby, Colorado on June 4th of 2004. Heemeyer had feuded with Granby town officials, particularly over fines for violating city health ordinances, when he chose to dump sewage from his business instead of installing a proper septic tank. His feud came to a head on June 4th, 2004. Over about 18 months, Heemeyer had secretly modified a Komsatu D355A bulldozer by adding layers of steel and concrete intended to serve as armor. He used this to demolish the Granby Town Hall, the former mayor's house, and several other buildings. Heemeyer's rampage concluded with a suicide after his bulldozer became trapped in the basement of a hardware store he had been in the process of destroying. So, yeah.
It sounds like a happy guy.
Yeah, this is one of those falling down type tales, I think.
I was just thinking of that movie. Yeah.
Like, no, I'd like the chicken sandwich with... I don't remember. I'm not good at movie lines, but no. I just remember him standing in the line and and getting frustrated with the guy behind the counter. I really enjoyed that movie. Falling Down.
I know.
Years ago.
I know.
Who was in that? Was
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. Yeah, way back in the day. That's like 25, 30 years ago. I just remember seeing the preview for that movie as a kid. Going, oh, I'd love to see that.
It's like I
could
relate.
It's like it's rated R, and I was like 8.
Oh.
Like, you're not going to watch that one, Tony. But this is almost like the real life version of it on steroids with what this guy, you know, kind of ended up doing. I came across this story by chance when I found the documentary on Netflix called Tread, which is out right now. I think it was just released here in 2020. And I've not even made it like a quarter way into the documentary. It was just you were coming in to record today, and I thought this would be a great dark side. So I just quickly found the Wikipedia entry and thought, well, let's go through it.
Okay.
So I do not know how this all ends or how it all plays through. I want to watch this doc, but it's quite a story.
Yeah.
Of someone that, because from what I can tell so far, the guy really didn't have a ton of enemies. There was very specific enemies that he had. But for the most part, like people who talked about him, like that had a relationship with him, was like, yeah, he was a great welder. He was part of a snowmobiling club. He helped every snowmobiler on that club put like this special like bumper around their snowmobile. And really, like, people talked about him in a very positive light.
And that, he just snapped.
Yeah, where it was like, he was a good guy. He wasn't like your crotchety man on the back porch, you know, screaming at the kids, you know, to get off this grass or anything like that. It's just like he was pushed too far by the powers that be when it came to his business. And eventually he just, yeah.
Wow.
Freaking lost it. So I'm not going to judge. I mean, I'm not going to, until I get to the end of the story, I'm not going to go, this is a crazy, evil person. I mean, it might have just been a mental condition.
Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, when you go and do that sort of shit. But I want to understand better how we got to that point. I want to understand how he got pushed there.
Yeah.
And what would have been the more the better alternatives than taking a modified bulldozer around town destroying everything.
I think anything would have been a better alternative than taking a modified bulldozer.
Is it? Is there anything, or would it be like in the option cards?
Not an option card.
Okay. But I want to go through this and hear his story.
Okay.
This sounds interesting. Marvin Heemeyer today on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are downloading our show or listening to our program so you don't miss any episodes of Dark Side of Wikipedia now 2 times a week. So let's continue on into the world of Marvin Heemeyer. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you on today's episode. Marvin Heemeyer was born on October 28, 1951 in South Dakota. Lived in Grand Lake, Colorado, about 16 miles away from Granby. According to a neighbor, Heemeyer moved to town more than 10 years before the incident. His friend stated that he had no relatives in Granby or the Grand Lake area. John Baldry, a friend of Heemeyer, said that he was a likable person. Heemeyer's brother Ken stated that he would bend over backwards for anyone. However, while many people described Heemeyer as an affable person, local resident Christy Baker claimed that her husband was threatened by Heemeyer after refusing to pay for a disputed muffler repair. Baker said her husband later paid Heemeyer $124 via an intermediary. In 1992, Heemeyer purchased 2 acres of land from the Resolution Trust Corporation, the federal agency organized to handle the assets of failed savings and loans associations. He purchased the land for $42,000 to build a muffler shop and subsequently agreed to sell the land to Cody Dochev to build a concrete batch plant, Mountain Park Concrete. The agreed price was $250,000. According to Susan Dochev, Heemeyer changed his mind and increased the price to $375,000 and later demanded a deal worth approximately $1 million. Some believe that this negotiation happened before the rezoning proposal was heard by the town council. In 2001, Granby's Zoning Commission and trustees approved the construction of the concrete plant. Heemeyer attempted to appeal the decision but was unsuccessful. It was claimed that Heemeyer, that the construction blocked access to his shop. He was subsequently fined $2,500 by the town council and a city judge for various violations, including not being hooked up to the sewer line. He had initially been unable to connect to the new sewer line as the line ran some 60 feet away from his property, and the city expected him to pay nearly $80,000 for laying the connector. And after the concrete plant was built, the city council denied him the easement necessary to join the new line underneath the plant. Heemeyer's bulldozer was a modified Komsatsu D355A that was referred to as the MK Tank in audio recordings, fitted with makeshift armor plating covering the cabin, engine, and parts of the tracks. In places, this armor was over 1 foot thick, consisting of 5,000 PSI quickcrete concrete mix sandwiched between sheets of tool steel acquired from an automotive dealer in Denver to make ad hoc composite armor. This made the machine impervious to small arms fire and resistant to explosives. 3 external explosions and more than 200 rounds of ammunition fired at the bulldozer had no effect on it. For visibility, the bulldozer was fitted with several video cameras linked to 2 monitors mounted on the vehicle's dashboard. The cameras were protected on the outside by 3-inch shields of clear, bulletproof Lexan. Compressed air nozzles were fitted to blow the dust away from the video cameras. Onboard fans and an air compressor were used to keep Heemeyer cool while driving. He had made 3 gun ports fitted for a .50 caliber rifle, a .308 semi-automatic rifle, and a .22 LR rifle, all fitted with a 1/2-inch thick steel plate. Heemeyer apparently had no intention of leaving the cabin once he entered it. Authorities initially speculated that he may have used a homemade crane found in his garage to lower the armor hull over the dozer and himself. Once he tipped that lid shut, he knew he wasn't getting out. Investigators searched the garage where they believed that Heemeyer built the vehicle and found cement and armor steel Heemeyer took about a year and a half to prepare. In his notes, he wrote, "It is interesting to observe that I was never caught. This was a part-time project over a 1.5-year time period." Clearly, he was surprised that several men who had visited the shed late in the previous year had not noticed the modified bulldozer, especially with the 2,000-pound lift fully exposed. Somehow, their vision was clouded. Only Heemeyer died in the event by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. However, the modified bulldozer came to be known as Killdozer after the name of a short story by Theodore Sturgeon. So we've learned now essentially what the vehicle was that he was building. And we'll very soon go into the demolition that he used it for. Thoughts thus far on his construction and planning?
Well, I want to go back to the city council really not working with him at all on giving him easement or anything to be within code for his shop. I mean, had they maybe worked with him? And of course, I don't know the other side. I don't know the city council side, but it seems like maybe if they had worked with him, this whole thing would have just gone away.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it was almost a case of, and in the doc, thus far what I've watched, you know, allegedly it was a lot of, they refer to it as the old boys club. You know, it's like he was, you know, not from that town. He came to town. He wanted to try and do some things. He bought some land. I know he upset someone with the land that he did buy initially because someone else was trying to buy it. And I don't know if there was connection there with the city and it was like, let's just make this guy's life hell. And then eventually he'll sell it. I don't know. I don't know what, but he felt obviously very wronged.
Yeah. And I can kind of identify with him feeling wronged. I can't identify with him taking the action he did.
No, I mean, you would never, you know, no one would in a sane mind condone taking a the modified bulldozer and running over half your town.
No.
But you can, anyone can identify with being wronged and that feeling of, you know, wanting to make it right. But it seems like he almost tried to play by their rules somewhat.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And just like, it seems like the rules kind of changed when it was his turn.
And then he, it sounds like kept after he almost started playing their game. Right back at them with changing the price then. Where it's like, okay, you made this difficult for me. You made that difficult for me. You moved the goalpost on your end. Now you need something for me on my end. I'm going to move my goalpost now too. And, you know, it's like you tell kids, you know, fighting and both of you going at it and insulting each other, whatever. It doesn't help.
No.
You never get anywhere with it by continually... You know, you did this to me, so I'm going to do that to you. Okay, great. Then at the end, everybody hates each other even more. There's somebody has to figure out a way to come together.
Well, and it takes two to fight.
Yeah.
So it, you know, if you're going to dish it back out, you better expect what you're going to get.
Yeah. So it's quite a story. Let's continue on and learn about the next section here on the dark side of Wikipedia and the Marvin Heemeyer story. It is titled Demolition. On June 4th of 2004, Heemeyer drove his armored bulldozer through the wall of his former business, the concrete plant, the town hall, the office of the local newspaper that editorialized against him, and the home of a former mayor, in which the mayor's widow then resided, and a hardware store owned by another man, Heemeyer named in a lawsuit as well as a few others. Heemeyer had leased his business to a trash company and sold the property several months before the rampage. The attack lasted for 2 hours and 7 minutes, damaging 13 buildings, knocking out natural gas service to the town hall, and the concrete plant, damaging a truck and destroying part of a utility service center. Despite the great damage to property, no one besides Heemeyer was killed. The damage was estimated at $7 million according to Grand County. Commissioner James Newberry, emergency dispatchers used the reverse 911 emergency system to notify many residents and property owners of the rampage going on in the town. Defenders of Heemeyer contended he made a point of not hurting anybody during his bulldozer rampage. Ian Daughtry, a bakery owner, said Heemeyer went out of his way not to harm anyone. Others offered different views. The sheriff's department argued the fact that no one was injured was not due to good intent as much as good luck. Heemeyer had installed two rifles and firing ports on the inside of the bulldozer and fired 15 bullets from his rifle at power transformers and propane tanks. Had those tanks ruptured and exploded, anyone within 1/2 mile of the explosion could have been endangered. The sheriff's department said 12 police officers and residents of a senior citizens complex were within such a range. Heemeyer fired many bullets from his semi-automatic rifle at Cody Dotcheff when Dotcheff tried to stop the assault on his concrete plant by using a wheel tractor scraper, which was pushed aside by Heemeyer's bulldozer. Later, Heemeyer fired on two state patrol officers before they had fired at him. The sheriff's department also noted that 11 of the 13 buildings Heemeyer bulldozed were occupied until moments before their destruction. At the town library, for example, a children's program was in progress when the incident began. One officer dropped a flashbang grenade down the bulldozer's exhaust pipe with no apparent effect. Local and state patrol, including SWAT team, walked behind and beside the bulldozer, occasionally firing, but the armored bulldozer was impervious to their shots. Attempts to disable the bulldozer's camera with gunfire failed, as the bullets were unable to penetrate the 3-inch bulletproof plastic. At one point, Undersheriff Glenn Traynor climbed atop the bulldozer and rode it like a bronc buster, trying to figure out a way to get a bullet inside the Dragon. However, he was forced to jump off to avoid being hit with debris. At this point, local authorities and the Colorado State Patrol feared they were running out of options in terms of firepower, and that Heemeyer would soon turn against civilians in Granby. Governors Bill Owens allegedly considered authorizing the National Guard to either use an Apache attack helicopter equipped with a Hellfire missile or a 2-man fire team equipped with a Javelin anti-tank missile to destroy the bulldozer. This was quickly deemed unnecessary when Heemeyer became trapped in the basement of a Gamble's hardware store. As late as 2011, Governor Owens' staff still vehemently denied considering such a course of action, but since then, members of the state patrol revealed that, to the contrary, the governor did consider authorizing an attack, but ultimately decided against it due to the potential for collateral damage of a missile strike in the heart of Granby being significantly higher than what Heemeyer could have caused with his bulldozer. Two problems arose as Heemeyer destroyed the Gamble's hardware store. The radiator of the bulldozer had been damaged and the engine was leaking various fluids. And Gamble's had a small basement. The bulldozer's engine failed and Heemeyer dropped one tread into the basement and could not get out. About a minute later, one of the SWAT team members who had swarmed around the machine reported hearing a single gunshot from inside the sealed cab. It was later determined that Heemeyer had shot himself in the head with a .357 caliber handgun. So, it's interesting to hear. This was really a suicide mission.
Yeah.
Considering the way he got into the vehicle with no real way of getting out other than having it deconstructed around him, which he'd have to then wait for someone to do and then drag him out and then to prison. His whole motive the whole time was eventually, I'm going down. And what's interesting, too, is just how the guy's character, where people for so long describe him as being, you know, he'd, you know, bend over backwards for you. But then this is what he's ending up being
quite capable of doing.
Well, and the fact that he's doing this during the day, you know, I would say if I had been pushed to his limit and I was plotting to do what he would do, I would wait till night where there's not going to be people in these stores or mm-hmm. in these buildings, you know, yeah. everybody's going to be at home. But he's doing this during the day where there's a very high probability of somebody being hurt or killed. And mm-hmm. So I don't buy the whole, well, he was trying to not hurt anybody.
When you're running that thing into buildings,
no.
How do you know if someone's standing right there
yeah.
behind the wall that you're knocking over? I mean, you have no idea.
Right.
It's and this was quite premeditated.
For like a year.
This wasn't really, you know, like the falling down story where it's like, I'm going to go buy a gun right now and go nuts. Mm-hmm. This is somebody that had been really planning this shit show out. Mm-hmm. So it then makes you question, you know, so what is the guy's character when he's capable of premeditatedly planning this whole rampage, but at the same time, everybody loves him and he's such a friendly guy for the most part, unless you've wronged him.
Right.
But he's like, it's like, holy shit. Like, I don't know. That to me... There's something evil going on there when you can sit there and plan that out to that. I understand, like, the snapping, I'm going nuts, but mm-hmm. I'm going to premeditatedly snap?
Right, right. And you know, he had the whole year while he's building this thing to plan what time of day to attack or what time, mm-hmm. you know, when to do it. And it's like, you know, if he'd hit that library with all those kids in there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And he's purposely shooting at propane tanks and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, and I'm not trying to give the guy more credit at all, but you know how sometimes the people say, and if you want to, you know, get something out of your system and kind of release it and kind of come to peace, but not necessarily confront the perpetrator or the person who caused the issue or the person who wronged you, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you write a letter
yeah.
and maybe never send it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe he was building this tank thing essentially like a letter, but he didn't really have the true intent to use it, but then it was just sitting there. And then one day it was a, fuck it, I'm using this thing. But I mean, it was built. I mean, it wasn't like half-assed built at all. None of this thing was like, I'm going to build this really rugged or scary looking machine, but at the end of the day, I don't know if it's going to work or not. I mean, you had 3-inch thick covers on your camera so they can't get shot out.
I don't know that I agree with the whole letter thing, because that's a very, very expensive, time-consuming,
yeah.
quote-unquote letter
mm-hmm.
for... You know, using that analogy, I think that this was more of a, you know, maybe he was building it as a threat, like, give me my easement or I'm going to use this thing.
Because he didn't hide it either.
No.
And that's the other questionable part to it. But people, I mean, there's people who build weird looking vehicles. I mean, someone could have looked at that when I see the pictures of it. If I would have seen it, I'd have been like, oh, he's a storm chaser.
Sure.
I would have been thinking he was building a storm chasing vehicle, quite mm-hmm. honestly. And people do shit like that now for hobbies. So, you know, it makes you wonder if people just looked at it and went, oh, it's, you know, he's an expert welder. He's just kind of having some fun with extra parts and building this thing. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they weren't thinking anything of it. I don't know. I mean, it's... Would you overlook that when you're somebody?
No. If I saw something like that and I couldn't get a straight answer from the guy of what
yeah.
that is, you know, and it doesn't even sound like the people who saw it even asked. They
yeah.
just let it go.
Yeah.
But if I saw something like that and I'd be like, hey, what's that? And he really couldn't tell me, I'd be calling the police and saying, hey, there is something being built that looks very dangerous. Somebody needs to do like a welfare check.
Yeah.
On this guy, because he looks like he's building a massive weapon.
But could you do anything? I mean, would there be anything to stop anything with him built? If he's not using it for anything.
If you saw somebody were building bombs and you called the police.
But it's not a bomb.
Basically, it is a weapon of mass destruction. So I think it qualifies.
I don't know. This happened in 2004. So if there is any time where that argument would have worked, had somebody reported it, it would have been around then.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone was on edge for many a years, and many still are after 9/11, for another, we were all waiting for the next terrorist attack
at
that point in time. And I'm sure people in this town, when this thing's going through, the first thing they're thinking is not Marvin Heemeyer.
No.
Unless they knew that this thing was sitting in his vehicle, in his garage. I'm sure they were thinking Al-Qaeda is...
But those people that had seen it in his garage, they have to live with that, knowing that I saw him building that and I never said anything.
Yeah. It's like the ultimate, if you see something, say something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Marvin is building, it appears to be a tank of some sort in his garage.
Well, and it doesn't sound like he's super popular, so I'm sure the police would have come up with some reason to go and check it out.
But I don't know realistically that he was breaking any laws by building this thing.
No, but they could be asking, you know, what's your intention with this? What is this? You know, because this looks like a weapon of mass destruction, which ultimately it was.
Yeah. I just wonder how far they could have gone with that.
I mean, civilians aren't supposed to have tanks, and he basically built a tank.
You're right. But it was, you know, a handmade tank.
I still think there could have been probable cause enough to go and search the premises.
At least get some questions answered.
Yes. And then it would have been on the radar of somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking they could have gone that far, but as long as he didn't say, I'm going to go run this through the town, he could have said anything, because I'm just, you know, making a scary looking vehicle. It's just a hobby. It's just, and they probably would have been like, okay, whatever, you know. On the radar.
I don't know.
I don't think they could have confiscated it or taken
it. No, I don't think they could have taken it, but at least they would have had a heads up. Hey, Marvin's building a massive, you know, death machine. So, I mean, literally.
Yeah, yeah. Marvin's Death Machines and More. It was a new business that he opened up. He also sold pastries. It was, he made these death machines for people and made one hell of a cronut. Just a croissant donut, by the way.
And I hate those.
Remember years ago, there was like a craze of those.
Yeah.
People were like, oh my God, they're lighting up outside. I think it was New York or some places where they were invented. And it was like, oh my God, cronuts. They're just, yeah.
Nope.
Like a half-assed donut. Okay, let's continue on with the final chapter here in the Marvin Heemeyer story here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Police first used explosives in an attempt to remove the steel plates, but after the third explosion failed, they cut through them with a cutting torch. Grand County Emergency Management Director Jim Holahan stated that authorities were able to access and remove Heemeyer's body at 2 a.m. on June 5th. On April 19th, 2005, the town announced plans to scrap Heemeyer's bulldozer. The plan involved dispersing individual pieces to many separate scrap yards to prevent souvenir taking. In addition to writings that he left on the wall of his shed, Heemeyer recorded a number of audio tapes explaining his motivation for the attack. He mailed these to his brother in South Dakota shortly before stepping into his bulldozer. Heemeyer's brother turned the tapes over to the FBI, who in turn sent them to the Grand County Sheriff's Department. The tapes were released by the Grand County Sheriff's Office on August 31st, 2004. The tapes are about 2.5 hours in length. First recording was made on April 13th, 2004. The last recording was made 13 days before the rampage on May 22nd. God built me for this job, Heemeyer said in the first recording. He also said it was God's plan that he not be married or have a family, so that he could be in a position to carry out such an attack. I think God will bless me to get this machine done and drive it to do the stuff that I have to do. He said, God bless me in advance for the task that I'm about to undertake. It's my duty. God has asked me to do this. It's a cross that I'm going to carry, and I'm carrying it in God's name. Investigators later found Heemeyer's handwritten list of targets. According to the police, it included the buildings he destroyed, the local Catholic church, which he did not damage, and the names of various people who had sided against him in past disputes. Notes found by investigators after the incident indicated that the primary motivation for the bulldozer rampage was his plan to stop the concrete plant from being built near his shop. These notes indicated that he had held grudges over the zoning approval. I was always willing to be reasonable until I had to be unreasonable, he wrote. Sometimes reasonable men must do unreasonable things. Heemeyer's words later became a meme in the far-right extremist Boogaloo movement as I became unreasonable. So there turns out to be some sort of a God complex going on here.
Yeah.
With this individual, which, you know, when you start to believe that you're on a mission from God to do some sort of self-destructive and not just self-destructive, but destructive to the world mission, I think that anything is possible in one's mind if they've turned that much of their common sense over to that way of thinking, because then it all becomes that they feel that they are almost like some sort of enlightened individual, that they are, you know, almost prophet-like. There's something about them. They were chosen for this. And when when their reasoning and their mindset becomes they are chosen to do this horrible shit, you know, I guess that's how you can go about your day, your daily day, and seem reasonable and normal to most people. But in silence, often the back, your religion is not a true religion at all. I mean, it's a corrupted, perverted version of a religion and a version of faith that is driving your craziness.
Right.
I mean, that's how you have terrorism. That's how you have 9/11.
What this was. It was just domestic.
It was just domestic. I mean, because he didn't say, you know, he didn't word it the way that we hear it worded when we hear about extremists of other religions carrying out some sort of horrible, heinous task, because he worded it this way in terms that we're more familiar with. It doesn't make it better or less worse. It's just that way of thinking. There's something in human minds or certain human minds that once you kind of cross that threshold of you would never do this unless you're the chosen one by your deity, then it's game on.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell that is or how you get to that far, but it clearly happens.
I think that there's just an underlying mental illness diagnosis there. And when you're pushed, when anybody, even the healthy mind, is pushed, you push back. And he just pushed back in a huge way.
Yeah. Quite an event. I'm curious. They had said that when they dismantled the vehicle, that they took it to different dump sites to avoid people collecting, you know, souvenirs. You do have to wonder, at least my mind always wonders, if I do an eBay search, am I going to find part of Marvin Heemeyer's tank? I don't want part of Marvin Heemeyer's tank. I'm wondering if there were in fact people then that went out and found parts and shit like that.
Yeah, and it's probably the people that had to dismantle it and take it apart. Everybody sneaks something.
Yeah. It's like, what's that over your fireplace? Well, that's Heemeyer's old bumper. Oh, God. Yeah. Quite a story. of literally falling down and completely losing your mind. It's amazing no one was killed in that story other than Heemeyer taking his life. There you go. That wraps up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like our program, keep us on the air. Go ahead and give us a review there on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe wherever you listen to us. Let your friends know we exist. Until next time, for The Dark Side of Wikipedia and Jenny, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.